With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-proportioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. It's easy to find time to eat well with 50 wholesome, hassle-free meals to choose from each week delivered to your door. Their lineup of prep and bake meals come together with minimal mess and only 5 minutes of prep. So your oven does most of the work, not you. Get up to 10 free meals and a free high-protein item for life at HelloFresh.com/HelloFresh Podcast. One item per box with active subscription. Free meals applied as discount on first box. New subscribers only. Varies by plan. That's up to 10 free HelloFresh meals. Just go to HelloFresh.com/HelloFresh Podcast. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit.
Ready to optimize your nutrition this year? Factor has chef-made gourmet meals that make eating well easy. They're dietitian-approved and ready to heat and eat in 2 minutes, so you can feel right and feel great no matter what life throws at you. Factor arrives fresh and fully prepared, perfect for any active, busy lifestyle. Lose up to 8 pounds in 8 weeks with Factor Keto meals. Based on a randomized, controlled clinical trial with Factor Keto, results will vary depending on diet and exercise. With 40 options across 8 dietary preferences on the menu each week, it's easy to pick meals tailored to your goals. Choose from preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, or Keto. Factor can help you feel your best all day long with wholesome smoothies, breakfasts, grab-and-go snacks, and more add-ons. Reach your goals this year with ingredients you can trust and convenience that can't be beat. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/factorpodcast and use code FACTORPODCAST to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code FACTORPODCAST at factormeals.com/factorpodcast to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box.
My name is Dr. Leah Kaler. I am a licensed clinical psychologist. I do work for the FBI. However, everything that I'm going to talk about here today are my own thoughts, beliefs, opinions, and I am not speaking on behalf of the FBI today.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we get to our special guest, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question. And this week, we've got, what is the coolest hotel you have ever stayed in?
Yeah, I went to a hotel. And it was in Park City, Utah. And at the time, I was a camp counselor for kids. But this is like a very elevated camp counselor situation where we take the kids and we travel around the country. And this was my first summer ever doing it. We went coast to coast, 40 days, 40 nights, 40 kids. But it was a very affluent type of trip. So we were in Park City, Utah. And we stayed, and I wish I could remember the name of the hotel off the top of my head. I don't know. But they had filmed The Bachelor there, so you know it was fancy.
Was it the Montage?
Oh, I can get back to you and definitely let you know the name of it. But because we had several staff members, we each had our own bedroom that then connected into like a huge kitchen and a huge living area and like private balconies. And I was like, oh my gosh, I will never be staying in a hotel as nice as this again in my life. Meanwhile, I'm like fresh out of college, but that is the one that sticks out for me.
That's awesome.
What do you got?
I'm having a hard time thinking. We've stayed in a lot of really cool hotels.
Yeah. The Willard?
Nah.
The Greco Hotel was pretty cool.
Yeah. In Corfu, Greece, the Greco Imperial Palace.
Oh, the Imperial. Yeah. There you go. In Greece. Yeah, that one was good. What's that one in the Carolinas? It's into the mountain that it's.
It's the Omni Asheville that you like.
Ah, that was fun there.
Yeah,
that was beautiful. Actually,
we also love the Dell. We return to the Dell.
Yeah, the Hotel Del Coronado probably be the top.
It's a historic hotel, but they've modernized it, and it's actually the first hotel in California to ever have electricity.
Yeah, that'd probably be my number one.
From the 1800s. It's really cool. Built in the late 1800s.
So Hotel Del Coronado, thank you for everything. I remember when we were going through SEAL training, I was never allowed to go in there. So just getting my ass kicked me and watching it, finally getting a chance to go in there.
Yeah, if you're ever in Coronado, California, and you stay at the Del, you can see the Bud students running in front of the hotel.
They put a flyer out in the hotel. There's a certain evolution we do called rock portage, where we basically paddle these boats in over these rocks and get our asses handed to us. And they set up chairs so the rich people can watch us get... Watch that.
It's entertainment, right?
Yeah, it's complete entertainment. And they were having a blast. I remember seeing that. Yeah. And then I was like, one day I'm going to stay in there. So,
Now we get to go back and stay and make fun of the Fed students.
Yeah, I think now I'm on the other side of it laughing at them. What about
Comes
you?
Full circle.
That's a tough one. But honestly, I think one of my favorites is probably one from Thailand. This one called The Shore at Kattathani. Had your own private pool, overlooking the entire beach, and it was probably the most beautiful sight that I had seen to that day. The first picture on my Instagram, if you go, look at that.
Of course.
It's the coolest place, and they've got the best customer service. Everything is pretty cheap over there. So you can just get whatever you want and doesn't feel like you're spending too much.
Yeah.
Nothing beats a Holiday Inn Express though, right? You know what I'm talking about?
That was a fun question. Yeah,
that's a good question.
Okay.
All right, let's get this started. Thank you again for coming on and doing this. We're going to get a little bit about your backstory. So please tell us where you're from.
Sure. So I was born and raised in southwestern Pennsylvania in a very small town outside of Pittsburgh.
When we say small, we're talking 2,000, 5,000?
Pretty darn small. I would say 5,000 is probably a good guess. Yep.
All right. And your family, the backstory on them, what's your dad, mom?
Sure. So my dad sells drugs and my mom's in prison. My dad is a pharmaceutical drug representative and my mom is a dental hygienist in a maximum security all-male prison.
Oh my gosh.
So we have kind of an interesting lifestyle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you should say it like that every time. That was awesome. Yeah.
It's fun, right? You know, then I really get people's attention.
Yeah.
You got mine immediately. I was like, wow, I wasn't expecting you to say that, but that's good. All right, cool. You got any siblings?
I do. I have a younger brother who his name is Tim. He's very excited that I'm here today. Big fan of yours. He says that your movie is his very favorite. So I'm sure that he's extremely jealous of me being here and him not. But his name is Tim. He is retired Air Force and now helping as a civilian.
Oh, right on.
Thank you for his service. Yeah. Tell him thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So if
you certainly will.
I'd love to know how you got into your career.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I'll tell you what I thought my career was going to be, and it did not turn out that way. I thought that I was going to go into medicine. I thought that I was going to be an anesthesiologist. I had the privilege of, in high school, getting a chance to do a shadowing experience. And again, my dad, being hooked in with the hospitals, got me an experience where I had the opportunity to be completely scrubbed in and watching a reconstructive knee surgery, where they were going to do like a complete replacement. And I was so excited. You know, I'm a high school student. I am like fully gowned up in the hospital or in the operating room, excuse me. They have music playing. Like, we're jamming out. It's so exciting. They have like all these like power tools basically that they're using to cut open the bone. And I'm just watching and I'm having a grand old time. And then a piece of bone like flips up onto the surgeon's gown. And I'm like, excuse me, I don't feel so good anymore. And I end up waking up in like the nurse's office, basically with like a juice box and like a cookie. And so that is how I decided that I probably wasn't going to be going into medicine. So I thought, okay, let's go to college. Let's figure it out. And ended up in a handful of different psychology courses that I just absolutely fell in love with forensic psychology, specifically because I had the opportunity to go work at my mom's prison. They made some special permissions to allow me to go and shadow the psychiatrists and the psychologists around for several weeks. So that prison is a maximum security all-male prison with a death row. And so I thought, well, what could be cooler than this? Like, this is such an amazing opportunity. I'm an undergraduate student, and I was just blown away at being on the inside, what that looked like. And while I was on the inside, I got a chance to spend time with people who were serving time on death row. I had the opportunity to sit in and basically kind of help facilitate a lot of the mental health groups that were going on. So Thinking for a Change, which is basically folks who are getting ready to be released on the outside, substance use, helping people kind of overcome that. And then the one that really, really stood out to me was folks who were being treated as sex offenders. And that was what really stuck out to me. So I thought, this is what I'm going to do. So I graduate from undergrad. I go to John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. And that is my specialty. I get in with the Sex Offender Research Lab. That's a lot of the work that I have done as far as why do individuals choose children? How do they choose them? How do they groom them? How do they speak to them online? Like, what is the entire process? So I thought that that was going to be my career. And then I switched gears. I went to St. Louis University for my PhD in clinical psychology. And there, instead of working sex offenders, I worked with individuals who had been victimized, whether in childhood or whether in adulthood, and got a chance to work with them, helping treat and process their trauma. And I really fell in love with that work. But I kind of figured, okay, what is going to happen here? Like, I had a very strong feeling that after doing some time in prison, that I didn't want to spend an entire career there. Like, that was just far too anxiety provoking for me and very high stress. And then I really enjoyed working with the individuals in the community who had some type of history of sexual abuse. And so I figured, okay, like, where do I land? Where do I figure this out? And eventually I found my way to the FBI. So while I was doing my PhD at St. Louis University, I had applied to be an FBI intern. I thought, this sounds cool. Like, I'll put my name in, I'll see what happens, whatever. And they call me and I get the internship. And so I spent the summer at the St. Louis field office. I had an amazing time. I got a chance to help work crimes against children as much as I possibly could. I worked with two incredible agents who that's all they do all day, every day. That is what their jobs are dedicated to. And I really fell in love with that type of work and just having the opportunity to change lives on such an incredible basis. And it's so unfortunate because there is so much of this particular crimes against children that the FBI takes care of, that there is no shortage. After my internship ended, I was offered a full-time position. And at that point in time, I had finished my PhD. I'd become a clinical psychologist. And so the position that I have now and that I've had for 5 years is that I am a psychologist for our employees on the inside. So our agents, our professional staff, our task force officers, and anybody in between, I help them. So my specialties are trauma and sleep. So that's a lot of what I help folks do is process through the trauma, because as an agency, as an organization, the mission comes first, and we ask our people to do a lot of really incredibly hard things and to see a lot of things that most folks should never see in their life. So I help them process through a lot of that. And then that kind of goes hand in hand with sleep and having sleep issues.
That is so interesting.
I'll pause there because I'm very verbose.
No, it's fine. I got a question. Studying the predators in the beginning, that helps you, obviously, when you're dealing with the victims. And by studying them, I was curious, is there a pattern that you guys extracted from that to where if we were sitting somewhere in town and somebody walked in, you'd be like, hey, right there. I mean, is it that obvious, or they just hide it well? Or I'm just curious about that.
I think that any of our agents would tell you that they can pick it out very easily. For me, a lot of my research was, how do individuals find children online? So what are they looking for in their profile? What are they saying to the children? How are they including them in conversation? How are they starting to bring up sexual topics? So a lot of my research was based online and how offenders contact children in the online space.
Because there's a courage that goes with that. They're not face-to-face over the keyboard, right? So it's kind of like a bait thing, I guess.
There's a lot that goes into it, but I do think that there's a way where they can contact lots of different children all at once and kind of see like what sticks almost, and then kind of pursue the ones that seem like the child may be interested in connecting. Because a lot of times what we found was that the kids who are being contacted and things are moving forward in the grooming process is that these kids are lonely. Oftentimes there's some type of rupture in the family. Maybe they're being bullied at school, but there's just a lot of loneliness. And that's what's coming through in the profile, specifically like a Facebook profile or, you know, whatever. I feel so old right now, but like whatever the kids are on right now and like what their profile paragraph looks like, that's oftentimes what the individual is looking for and how they find someone who is more likely than not going to be willing to connect with them.
That is terrifying.
And when you walked into...
It's incredibly sad.
The only reason I'm asking this is I went into our death row before too. And mm-hmm. I remember walking in there. And from the outside, when you watch TV or you can just see it from the outside, is one thing. Now you walk mm-hmm. in there and that door shuts behind you, that's completely different. Did you have that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, check.
I certainly had that experience. And I had that experience even more so, this kind of like gut feeling of, oh, I don't think I'm supposed to be here, when I'm co-facilitating a therapy group for individuals who have been convicted of sexual crimes, where we're sitting in a circle. It's myself and another female facilitator. The door closes and I've got a pager on me that is basically a button to let anyone know that I need assistance. So I think not only being in the prison, but then being in particular situations where I knew this cannot be a long-term career for me. While it was an incredibly valuable experience for me, this will not be the career that I choose.
I think your spirit knows when you walk in somewhere and you're not supposed to be in there. That's the reason I was asking, because I immediately felt that when that door shut. I was like, well, I'm not supposed to be in here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
With the sexual predators in prison, do you think that there is a chance of rehabilitation?
That's a great question. And this is something that we didn't talk about. But as my postdoc, I spent several months working with sexually violent predators, which is a whole nother ball game, if you will. Not every state has that. And sexually violent predators are people who have committed some type of sex crime. They have been deemed to have some type of mental illness or defect, and there's a belief that they will commit another sex crime. And so that was for a small period of time, I think maybe 3 or 4 months, I did those types of evaluations. And what's interesting about sexually violent predators and what makes it so high stakes is that these individuals, we have to make the evaluation, we meaning the psychologist, of whether this person is likely to reoffend or not, because they've already, at this point when they're getting this evaluation, whether they are a sexual predator or not, they've already they've completed their time in prison. And so the question is this person too dangerous to be put out into society that we need to civilly commit them? And that's a whole nother ballgame whenever it comes to civil rights and taking that away from someone. And it is very, very high stakes work. And again, part of the reason why I only did it for a few months is that it is very hard to make that determination as to whether someone can be rehabilitated. We certainly did release folks back out into the community, and every year they have the opportunity to have an annual review of their documents, of how they're progressing in therapy, how they're progressing on the unit. They have the opportunity to be interviewed and to explain how they've changed and how things have gone in the past year since their last interview. But that's a very, very challenging question. And I don't know that I necessarily want to answer that, but I will tell you that there have been people who have been civilly committed year after year after year. And then there have been people who have been released. So I think that it's very much on a case by case basis, and that there are a lot of dynamics that come into play when we make those decisions, because they're not made lightly at all.
Sure. Especially they're not in their environment.
Right. So the folks who are convicted, well, who are considered to be sexually violent predators are then taken to a secure facility. It's not a prison, but it's a secure facility where they're living with other folks who are also deemed sexually violent predators. So it is kind of this very interesting dynamic in place where it's kind of unlike anywhere else. It's not their own environment. It's not home. It's not prison. So it's an interesting place to be, a place you don't ever want to be.
Yeah.
No.
The fact that we even have to have those is scary.
Yeah. I would think, though, if they've gotten to the point of being in a maximum security prison for doing these crimes, they're just going to keep repeating them.
And what's very interesting is that not every state, there's actually only a handful of states that have sexually violent predator laws and the ability to civilly commit people after their prison sentence is finished. So it's just very, very interesting and a very touchy subject.
Sure. Mm.
I would not want to be in that position. I wouldn't even want to. That's got to be hard to be in that position to have to evaluate them and then deem them, you know.
Oh, especially if you have kids.
Yeah. Because your own judgment is going to be
incredibly high stakes.
Yeah.
That's the most vulnerable thing we got down here is our children.
Mm-hmm.
So you said sleep, too. You work a lot on that.
Debt sucks. That's plain and simple. But what if you could just press reset? Right now, Navy Federal Credit Union is offering 0% intro APR on balance transfers for 12 months. That means no crazy interest piling up, just a real actual shot at paying down your balance. And here's a bonus. If you spend $2,500 in your first 90 days with a Cash Rewards or Cash Rewards Plus credit card, they'll give you $250 for free. That is free money right there just for using your card. It's a no-brainer. Take control of your finances today at NavyFederal.org. Navy Federal Credit Union, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is federally insured by the NCUA. After the intro rate expires, variable APRs range from 15.15% to 18% based on creditworthiness. Rates subject to change, ATM fees for cash advances up to $1 at non-Navy Federal ATMs.
Yes, so my path has gone a lot of different places, but during my residency year, also known as an internship year for psychologists, I spent my time at the Memphis VA Medical Center. I had an amazing time. I got a chance to go do lots of different rotations. And I wish that I could go back time and remember whether I actually wanted the sleep rotation or not, because we have a bunch of interns and we have a bunch of postdocs and we all get together in a room and we all kind of have to agree on everyone getting the major rotations that they wanted. And then some people kind of having to compromise with some of the other rotations that they want. So I wish I could go back in time and remember whether I wanted the sleep rotation or not. But nonetheless, that's what I ended up with as one of my many rotations. And I absolutely fell in love with sleep. I got a chance to teach sleep hygiene classes where lots of people fell asleep on me. It's perfectly fine. Everyone was sleep deprived, but I can't.
In that class,
that's
the point, right? That's like the only place you can actually fall asleep in the class.
Yeah.
The point is to teach you how to get better sleep at night when you're supposed to be sleeping. Right, yeah. But nonetheless, I consistently had people fall asleep. Like, I could put money on it. People falling asleep in my class every week. It is what it is. So I taught sleep hygiene classes. One thing that I feel like a lot of people don't know about, but and this was something that I learned while I was at the VA, is how to treat nightmares. I feel like so many people struggle with this, not just in our veteran population and our first responder population, but so many people struggle with nightmares, and there is a way to treat it. And I learned the protocol while I was there and had the opportunity to work with veterans on the protocol, which is called imagery rehearsal therapy, if any of your listeners are interested. And that's something that I still do today in my work with the FBI, is whenever people have nightmares and it's something that they're really struggling with, I will help them. I'll work on that.
What is that?
Yeah, you got an overview for us?
I sure can. Yeah. So oftentimes whenever we have a nightmare, it is, so let me back up. Whenever we dream, let me back up even further. Whenever we sleep, your body, if you're a normal, average, healthy sleeper, should go through various different cycles. So you should be cycling through light sleep, deep sleep, REM sleep. And if you're a normal, average, healthy sleeper, you're going to be cycling through these several times a night, about five times throughout the average night. We're going to say like 8 hours of sleep that night. So REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, is most famous for having dreams. Dreams can happen in other stages, but dreams most often happen during REM. One of the other very important things that REM is all about is that it's helping us process our emotions. It's helping us sift through and consolidate memory and realize like what's trash, what's good for short term, what's important for long term memory. So there's a lot of really important things that are happening and other things that I didn't even mention about REM sleep. But whenever we have a nightmare, oftentimes it is thought that our body is trying to process through something that has been traumatic to us that we just haven't been able to process successfully during the daytime. So whenever we're having a nightmare, our body is like, okay, well, here's another opportunity for us to try and process this. Let's try and process it at night. And sometimes that's very successful, but whenever we get into the point of a person having the same nightmare over and over and over again, kind of like a broken record, what's happening is that our adrenaline and our cortisol are so high that when the brain is trying to process through this traumatic event during REM sleep, that it just starts to become a broken record because the adrenaline and the cortisol are too high. We need to bring these chemicals, these stress hormones, back down to baseline so that we can successfully process through this trauma and this nightmare and kind of get back to getting better sleep. So one way that we can do this, and something that I'll mention, is with imagery rehearsal therapy, IRT, it is most successful with folks who have the same nightmare over and over and over again. That is the way in which this protocol is most successful. So in a nutshell, what would happen is that the person who has the same nightmare over and over again should meet with a mental health professional. And when you're meeting with the mental health professional, you're going to describe what typically happens in this nightmare. Then you're going to work hand in hand to figure out what is a better way that this dream can end. And as we know, dreams are very fantastical. We have to suspend reality because anything can happen in dreams. You could be flying, you could be Superman, like lots of different things can happen. So we want to suspend reality when we're coming up with a different ending to the nightmare. So what we like to say is that the nightmare should have a neutral or a positive ending. So take, for example, someone who has a nightmare where every night they're flying on a plane, and they're flying on a plane because this is their job. They've done it every day for however many years. They are behind all the controls in the cockpit. They know exactly what's happening. But for some reason, every night this plane goes down. Even if that wasn't actually what happened in real life, for some reason, that's what the brain wants to process on. So what I would work with in that example is, okay, we need to come up with either a neutral or a positive way that this dream ends. So when things start to go haywire in the cockpit and things are going crazy and all the lights are going off and maybe it's starting to smoke, we need to figure out a way for in this dream for you to fix it. And maybe you successfully land the plane, or maybe you parachute out the back or whatever. So this dream can end in a neutral or positive way. So I would work with my client, figure out a way where this dream can end in a neutral, positive way that they're happy with. And once we settle on that, then the homework actually happens in the daytime. So what this person will do is every day they will practice this new dream when they're in a relaxed state. So they will find a place that's going to be quiet, that's going to be relaxing. Maybe they listen to a little bit of soft music or something that can get them to a point where they are kind of coming back down to baseline, that their anxiety and their stress levels are not going to be too high. And then we have them imagine this new dream several times during the day. And this practice continues for quite a while, this daytime practice. And basically what happens is that we're teaching the brain, okay, during the daytime, we're having the same beginning scenario. I'm in the plane. Things are starting to go haywire. I'm losing control. But then as we continue to practice this new dream over and over again during the daytime in a calm state, at night, the brain will realize, okay, we've been working on this so many times. Maybe let's see what happens if we bring this into the dream world. And eventually, that's what normally happens, is that the brain then starts to take over this new dream that has this neutral or positive ending. And eventually the person just kind of stops having this dream altogether, or it becomes so mundane that they forget that they're having this dream now that it has a neutral or positive ending.
So interesting. Do you think you can actually force your dreams?
I think that with continued practice, you can certainly help yourself whenever it comes to imagery rehearsal therapy. I don't know if the question that you're asking is kind of almost like lucid dreaming, which is a whole nother thing where people can kind of train themselves to realize when they are dreaming and then take control over that. That is certainly a skill. I don't know a whole lot of people who know how to do that, but there are books out there to teach you how to lucid dream. But what we're doing with imagery rehearsal therapy is more so we continue to go over this new dream so many times in a very relaxed state that eventually the brain takes it from the daytime into the nighttime.
So you're combining your reality and your dreams. That's pretty powerful. Because
it's
you can do
very,
things in there
cool.
that you can't do in reality. Like
Say
solve problems. There's some things you can do in your dreams that you can't actually do functionally in reality.
Right.
But if you can take your reality into your dreams and combine those together, I wonder what kind of mechanism that'll open up.
It's incredible. And again, whenever we're coming up with this new dream, it doesn't have to be suspended to reality because dreams aren't. So if in the dream, yeah, you turn into Superman and you fly away and you leave the plane behind, that's fine too. Whatever works for your brain and your imagination, because we, as adults, we really don't use our imagination a whole lot, and it's kind of a shame.
Yeah. Someone I was talking with the other day was our past is our reality, our future is our imagination, and our present is our creation. And I'd never thought about it like that until he said it, but there's a lot of truth in that. But
I like
the dream world is good, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that.
And
I never remember my dreams. Like very rarely I remember my dreams.
People tell me that all the time, not to worry at all. It doesn't mean one thing or another about you. Sometimes people will not remember dreams at all. And then they start remembering things and things are very, very vivid. And when that happens, I attribute that more to a change maybe in like a medication or routine, something along those lines. But if you have never really remembered your dreams and that's still continuing to this day, I'm not concerned at all.
Well, let me ask you this. What's the difference between a dream and a vision?
Like a prophetic vision or something?
Because you know when you're dreaming, it's kind of, even in the dreams, I know when I'm dreaming. But then when there's those times when it's real, like you're in it.
Does there have to be a difference, or can they be occurring at the same time?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I was just curious because there's a difference between the two, the way they feel. Like when you wake up in the morning after a dream is one thing, but some people wake up and be like, hey, man, I had something last night. I didn't know the difference between waking up and when I was in it.
I think that they could happen at the same time. I don't know necessarily what the difference is, but I do think that they can happen simultaneously.
The weirdest dreams I've ever had, just talking about dreams, that I actually remember. I woke up and I called my friend that I don't talk to all the time, but when we do talk, we're close, that kind of friend, you know, you don't have to talk to her every day. But both dreams, they were like 2 years apart. In my dream, I was holding her baby. And she was not, she was not pregnant. She didn't have kids or anything. And I told her, I was like, hey, I was holding your baby, and I could like tell her exactly what the room looked like and everything. It was very vivid for me. And she laughed and she was like, well, not pregnant, you know. 3 months later, she texts me and she said, I'm pregnant. And then I actually got to hold the baby that was in my dream. It was the weirdest thing. Years later, I have another dream that I'm holding her a different baby, and she's pregnant again. Isn't the strangest freaking thing? I've never understood that. Like, why would I get that in my dream?
So maybe, well, maybe this is you having a dream and a vision at the same time, but oftentimes whenever we're dreaming, it is not necessarily about the content, but it might be you're dreaming about her because of the relationship that you have with her or the emotions, because that's oftentimes what's happening during REM sleep, is that even though someone may show up in our dreams or something fantastical happens, or people will be like, oh, what does it mean to have a ladder in my dreams? I think that it's much more symbolic sometimes of like the relationship, the emotions, like things that are you're going through at that point in time. So I would be curious to know at that point in time when you were having those dreams, you know, more about your relationship with her, because that's probably what was manifesting in your dreams.
Yeah. And it was so weird because we didn't talk often. So I hadn't just talked to her or anything. She was just happened to pop up in my dream, and I was holding her baby that didn't exist at the time.
All right, what's the significance of the ladder? Because I've actually been having some dreams about ladders. It's odd to bring that up right now, but is there something to that?
What do you think the significance of a ladder in a dream is?
Climbing up. Taking steps upward and full, kind of, and the up is the right direction. Kind of a progress. It's a good thing. And I base that off of kind of like a chutes and ladders game. And when you were climbing the ladder.
I love chutes and ladders.
Isn't that good? And when you're climbing the ladder, it's a good thing. So this is a complete rabbit hole she and I are on right now.
Yeah. But go ahead.
I was like, hey, girl, I've been having these freaking crazy ladder dreams recently.
Yeah, like, okay, now you can be our psychologist. Yeah. Tell us what our dreams mean.
All right, Doc. Let me get out of here.
Yep, go ahead and lay back. It's time. Yep. So again, I think that it's what's going on in your life. Maybe what are your goals? What are you trying to move towards? And I do think that oftentimes ladders have to do with progress or moving towards what it is that you want, or literally climbing up the ladder if that's something that you're moving towards, maybe a promotion or something along those lines. So I do think that based on what's going on in your life right now, it's just a reflection of what's happening in your life and what you're trying to move towards.
That's good. I was trying to figure it out in my own head, and there's some things that I'm unable to reach by myself. And the ladder significance is I correlate that with kind of people in my life. Like, they're ladders that help me climb up into different places that I wouldn't normally be able to get to.
Absolutely. And I think that that's really insightful, is that like maybe each of these people or these mentors are the rungs of the ladder that help you climb up further and further and further.
How important, I'm talking to some other people, some of my teammates about this, how important is it for the breathing to incorporate that into helping with sleep, like before you, throughout your day kind of deal?
There are some people who I will say they break every single sleep rule and they sleep just fine. And oftentimes it's their partner that complains, he breaks every sleep rule and, you know, he sleeps like a log. What's the deal? And there will just be some people out there who can do all the wrong things, if you will, whenever it comes to sleep, and they sleep amazing, and congratulations to those folks. Like, I salute you.
Yeah,
that's
for
me.
Other people,
yeah, good
that's
for you.
You
that's me. I'm like, I'm on my phone like going down rabbit holes right before I fall asleep, and then
she's out.
I'm out, like I pass the F out and I sleep so good.
I don't.
Yeah.
Yep. That is how it always goes. I do. Yeah. I'm not a marriage and family therapist. I don't pretend to play one on television, but I think that I've saved more marriages just by helping people and couples and bed partners talk about their sleep and figure out what works for them. Because this is what almost always happens, is one falls asleep like a bump on a log. You cannot disturb them and they break all the rules. The other one struggles, tosses, turns, is frustrated, is jealous, And that's normally the dynamic that I see.
Those two people go well together, I guess, right? Yeah. That's the whole concept behind this.
They seem to find each other in the same bed. I'll say that.
I mean,
well, he does all of the, like, the breathing and the, you know, listening to the rain on the TV, doing all the things that he's got the cooler thing on the bed.
I go out quick. I mean, but it's, I'll get up though.
So, yeah, he wakes up a lot.
So I would say that folks who do have problem sleeping, there are so many things that you can do to help yourself. And oftentimes, like, I'll go give sleep talks. I normally give like once a month because it just is so highly requested. But whenever I have a captive audience, like I'm in a lineup of other speakers who are going to be at like a weekend conference, I think a lot of people are like, oh, you know, whatever, sleep. Like, I don't want to sit through this. Because I think a lot of people have maybe had poor sleep for such a long period of time that they don't think that there's any hope for them, or they think that they know everything that there is to know about sleep. And when I give my talks, there's just so many pieces that come together to set yourself up for good sleep that people just don't realize it. And I think, to your point, breathing can be a great tool for people, but it's not the only tool. Right. So I would say, if you're wondering about that, test it out, give it a try, see if it works for you, see if it resonates with you. If it does, fantastic. If not, there are plenty of other ways to set your day up and your evening up to set yourself up for good sleep.
Are there a few components that are absolute, hey, these work, like don't eat after 9 or an hour before you go to bed, right? Stuff like that.
So I do think that there's a few that are hard and fast rules. And I would say the first one that I give every single time, it's not sexy, it's not exciting, it is consistency. Going to bed at the same time every night and waking up at the same time every morning. This is key. And when I say this consistency, I mean, even on weekends, even on holidays, I realize that's a super bummer.
That's a bummer. Yeah, but that's a bummer.
It's a super bummer. I get it. I know.
But most people like to have that break. Saturday, sleep in.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you why.
You ever feel like you're running around at full speed, but somehow still falling behind? That was me juggling work and travel and life, but never actually feeling in control. So I decided to try Strawberry.me's personal coaching, and honestly, it has really changed the way that I approach my days. I've been working with an amazing coach who's helped me adopt new habits that actually keep me on track. Now, staying organized isn't just something that I try and do, because it's embedded in a part of my routine and it feels natural. And one of the coolest features, I think, of Strawberry.me is their AI automatically takes notes during every session. So no more forgetting all the things that you talked about or losing momentum, because everything is automatically saved. If you've been struggling to get organized, get matched with a certified coach in as little as 4 hours. Start making some real progress out there. Go to strawberry.me/TNQ for 20% off your first month. That is strawberry.me/TNQ. Go take control of what's next. I promise you'll be glad you did.
Let's take an average person. They wake up at 6 a.m. Monday through Friday to go to work. So Monday, 6 a.m., Tuesday, 6, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Then the weekend comes and they're like, oh, yes, I'm going to sleep in. Like, this is so exciting. So they sleep in until 9 a.m. So the brain is like, okay, we're sleeping in until 9 a.m. on Saturday. So then Sunday rolls around. Well, what do you think the brain thinks that it should be doing?
The 6 a.m.?
Well,
or the day
it's
before.
Like, oh, yeah, it's it is confused. It doesn't know what it's going to do, but chances are it's probably the weekend and you're thinking, oh, well, I'm going to sleep in again. Like, it's Sunday. Of course, that's what I'm going to do.
Or it decides, let me see if I can get away with this again.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So Sunday, we sleep in until 9. And then what do you think the brain thinks it's going to do on Monday?
Mm-hmm. Sleep in until 9.
Yeah. I got that.
It's going to sleep in until 9. So think about the difference between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. is a 3-hour time difference. But that's also the same time difference if you flew from Los Angeles or New York to Los Angeles. So I don't know about you guys, but jet lag hits me pretty hard. It truly does.
It hits me.
And we are inducing our own jet lag when we go from 6 a.m. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then go down to 9 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday, or maybe you had a long weekend. The brain gets very confused. And so when we keep making this massive change, the brain isn't sure what it's supposed to be doing. It doesn't know what time zone it's supposed to be on. And it's just constantly playing catch up.
So let me ask you a question. If you wake up early, so I get up at 5:30 every morning, but then there's some days when I wake up earlier. Is it beneficial to try to stay in bed and sleep till your normal wake up time? Or if you're up, you're up.
So if you were my client, I would personally ask you, how much earlier are you waking up if 5:30 is your normal time?
Yeah, every now and again, a 4:30 will bump in there, or 4.
If I were you, I would try and stay asleep until your normal wake-up time, if you can. Sometimes there are just things that are happening that may be too anxiety-provoking or too exciting that, you know, your body wants to wake up, or maybe you're going to catch an early flight. And sometimes that just happens, and the brain is trying to help you out by waking you up early to be like, hey, don't forget, we're going to do this thing. So your brain is attempting to help you, but I would say, if you feel like you can fall back asleep and you're waking up at 4, try to stay asleep until your normal 5:30 time. That's what I would tell you.
Yeah, check. Maximize your routine, right?
Exactly. Yeah, if you can. Now, there will be times where you know that you're not going to be able to fall back asleep, but at least give yourself that opportunity to try and fall back asleep and stay on that consistent schedule.
So is that what you do now, like primarily, other than helping out your fellow agents at the FBI? Are you coaching people in sleep?
Yeah. So I have been a psychologist for the FBI for 5 years now. And so that entire time, I will be helping people with trauma. So processing that through various different therapeutic techniques. So I'm certified in EMDR and brain spotting. I love those. But then I'll also help people with sleep, because trauma and sleep issues go hand in hand. So oftentimes my treatment plan looks like helping people just tell them about better sleep hygiene and coaching them. Maybe it's through nightmare work, like we talked about, imagery rehearsal therapy. So every client that I work with is going to be unique, and their treatment plan that I make for them is going to be unique too. But most often there is a sleep issue in there, and it's so incredibly prevalent.
Oh, well, most people don't like talking about it. But the one thing about it is you can tell when somebody's not sleeping. Maybe not that first or second day, but eventually when they roll in there, you'll be able to see it.
You can see it, and everyone else around them can see it. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel dead if I don't sleep. Like, I have to have my sleep.
And, you know, I'm the same way. I practice what I preach hardcore. Sleep is one of my very favorite things to do and one of my very favorite things to talk about. But I really, truly do all the things that I preach. And I consistently, I think you said that you had a smart bed. I think I heard you say that. I have the 8 sleep. I'm obsessed with it.
Oh, this is great, isn't it?
I consistently get like 100 or a 99 when I follow all of my sleep tips. And I feel very confident in my sleep knowledge whenever that happens. But there will just be times where you have a poor night's rest based on other things, external circumstances. It does happen. But the issue here, and this is what I see a lot in my work, is that folks experience things and they see things on the job that we should not be asking normal human beings to see.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Whether that is cleaning up body parts from a recent plane crash, whether that is scooping up kids who have been part of a mass school shooting. We ask our people to do things that are horrific. And it is what it is. That's part of the job. And that's part of the job for lots of first responders, for our military. And what happens is we have this mentality of You have to be strong. You have to keep pushing. The mission comes first. Especially, I see this a lot in my folks who work crimes against children, who they don't even want to take a day off, because them taking a day off means that they are one more day further away from taking this person off the streets, meaning that more children could be victimized in that day in which they're taking their own personal vacation, which, please, please, please take your vacation time, take your annual time. But I say this to say is that we continue to push, and we take these traumatic things and we push them off to the side, or we think that we're compartmentalizing them. We think that we're pushing them off to the side. But after a while, taking these horrific things that we experience and that we see because a part of our job, it adds up. And eventually, you don't have any more space.
Oh, check.
And that spills out into lots of other areas in your life. And oftentimes, that comes out sideways in sleep, in nightmares, in insomnia. Lots of different ways.
That's where it starts, right?
I think that we just, we have a hard time asking for help. So we think, no, I'm going to do it myself. And putting it to the side has been my go-to for such a long time, and it's worked for me. And I'm going to keep doing it until it doesn't work. And I think to your point is that people don't realize when it doesn't work anymore. And normally someone else needs to tell them, hey, sure, I think maybe you need to talk to somebody.
Well, what happens is you got the elders around you, because if they're in our 20s and 30s, you're running and gunning, and then something bad will happen. Oh, but when you show up the next day, invincible. There'll be another one. Yeah, you're invincible. Completely invincible.
Yes.
And then when your leadership's in there and they've been doing this for 20 years and they seem fine, and for whatever reason, I remember when we talked about, hey, you don't bring your home to work or your work home. I'm like, well, what if those are the same thing? I mean, if you want me to talk about my home life at work, and I can't talk about my work life at home, then there's that. And then you got people who aren't married, and they're just running and gunning.
Oh yeah.
And then you have, especially when you have that duality in one kind of organization, where you got, because those are completely different types of humans, especially if you throw kids in the mix, and they feed off each other. I remember that, because I didn't hang out with the people who were married. They didn't even want us around, really. You know what I mean? In the FBI, same thing. In the FBI, we work with you guys all the time. Like when the single ones, we were always together. And then that extra life, or it's their real life. Being a parent and a husband and a wife, and that's a real life. It truly is. You know, the rest of it is a job for us, which we consume as our life. But I never heard it said like that. It's like, hey, when you're doing your job and you're running and gunning, no matter what it is, and it starts creeping into your dreams, that means your database is full.
It means that we need to start sifting through this, and we need to process it. Like you got a backlog, and we got to work through that.
Yeah. I never heard it put like this. Pretty good.
So a lot of our listeners are first responders and former military. Yeah. What would you tell them just on a, you know, I know you can't have a one-on-one with everybody, but just some basics on how to handle their trauma?
I would say first and foremost is to be honest with yourself. I think that there are a lot of people who aren't yet in touch with themselves. Just like Marcus was saying, like running and gunning, it is so much fun. You know, you're an agent, you're this, you're that. It is so exciting. And sometimes we have to reflect and make time to reflect, because that's also part of the problem too, is that we're not making time because we're so busy. We're go, go, go. We're taking on all the things that come up because it's so exciting and it's new and we're invincible. Taking time to reflect either alone or with someone that you trust of like, how is this impacting me? What's happening? And I think that this is really valuable to be done with folks who are more seasoned or who have been working that violation or who have been working that job for quite a while, because I think that they are kind of salty and crusty and crunchy, and they will be able to tell you what all the pitfalls are and where they have struggled, and help you identify that more easily in yourself.
Would you agree with the thought that there are some people that are made for the job, and then there are some people who want to do the job, and they get affected differently?
I agree with you that there are some people who are absolutely made for the job, but I also would say that those people, whether they like to believe it or not, have an expiration date.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And oftentimes they don't want to acknowledge that they have an expiration date.
No, it shows up.
And that, And it shows up. And then oftentimes that's why they end up in my office, is because I have to be the mirror to reflect back to them that, hey, you've done an incredible job. You've had an amazing career. Like, look at all the change that you've made. Look at all the children that you've saved. However, now it's starting to affect your mental health and it's spilling out into other things. And we need to figure out when enough is enough and when you can put your oxygen mask on first.
Sure. Because, you know, a lot of people hold on to that. They don't care about the damage to themselves. But the minute your leadership or somebody's like, hey, you're affecting those. And that's the hardest thing for us to hear in our lines of work. Behind, if you're wearing the shield or and carrying the sword, it's kind of like, hey, you know, you're dangerous, but now you're dangerous to us. And you're like, ah, what? Because this thing has an expiration date, the body. It, by design, mm-hmm. age is a heck of a thing that God put on us, isn't it, man? Especially in those lines of work when there is a retirement age. And when it starts to creep up on you, and nobody, like, we work out harder for longer and trying to stay in the game, and everyone knows those who are doing that. We can see it. And then in our communities, remember when someone says they were 30 years old, you're like, oh my God, you're 30? You're about to die. Are you okay?
Now we're like, you're a baby.
Yeah, you're a baby. But you realize that there's another life after your initial life. There's something else. And I never thought about it. Someone had to forcefully make me focus on it.
And I think that you make an excellent point there, is that there are a lot of folks who their job is their identity, the violation is their identity, and that's all they've done for a very long time. And they are making an incredible difference, but you have to recognize when you have given so much and it's time to step away. And oftentimes it's very hard to recognize that in yourself. Like you said, someone else needs to point it out for you. And sometimes they point it out forcefully, but sometimes it is really someone else bringing that to your attention. So that's why I say making time to reflect, or making time to reflect with your squad, your team, a trusted elder or mentor, so that they can help you keep on track and figure out exactly where you are and how close you are to that expiration date.
It has to be why we invented rank and retirement ages and desk jobs. You know, paperwork.
That makes a lot of sense.
It has to, right? I never thought about it until you and I were talking about it like this, but it's got to be why that came online. Because you just, the guys, even when you, as you get older, you get more experienced, that carries a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can do a lot of stuff with experience and that youth, but has that strength, right? And that determination. Yeah, I never thought about it. You said that.
They need expiration dates in Congress too, because there's some people in there that expired a long time ago.
Man, died in there. How the hell did you die in there, man? That shouldn't even be a thing. Yeah, right.
I'm thinking about like expiration dates. I'm like,
yeah, don't worry about
there's some
that's
there
funny.
Damn
that's funny,
near
though.
Dead.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Like, that's a 2-year gig. How did you die in there?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, you're extremely interesting. How can people like follow everything that you do and whatever you've got going on? How can they see that?
Absolutely. So I have a book coming out on sleep. It's called The Sleep Advantage. And it is basically a very comprehensive handbook for how to get good sleep. So it is the compilation of all of my years of teaching about sleep, working one-on-one with sleep. And I give lots of talks. And there are, like you mentioned, only so many people that I can work with in a day, one-on-one, just based on time constraints. And I had recently given a talk and someone had mentioned like, hey, my best friend couldn't be here, but I think this would be such valuable information for her. Do you have anything that I can share with her? Have you written a book? And I was like, oh, people would be interested in that? Okay. Mm-hmm. So I took all of my knowledge that I have and I wrote it for my first responder folks, because I think that, again, sleep is so incredibly overlooked and it's so important. And we're calling it the sleep advantage because if you really truly are getting good sleep, it can impact your decision making. It can impact your reaction times. It can make you the best of the best. It can improve your performance. And I think that that's so important because sleep in and of itself is not very sexy. It's not very exciting. And so I explain, here are all the ways that it can help you. And also, if you're not getting good sleep, here are all the ways that it can hurt you. And then I also have kind of like a troubleshooting area where I have chapters on nightmares, insomnia, not being able to stay asleep in the middle of the night, not being able to fall asleep at night, sleepwalking, sleep paralysis, all kinds of different things. And then the big one, which is obstructive sleep apnea. So I give people tons of knowledge and information and practical steps on how they can move forward. So my book is going to be released in the spring. It's called The Sleep Advantage. Otherwise, I have a LinkedIn, Dr. Leah Kaler. And I also have a website, drleahkaler.com. And people can email me and find me at info@drleahkaler.com.
How do you spell your last name?
It's like Taylor with a K.
Okay.
K-A-Y-L-O-R.
So I like to watch YouTube to learn stuff. Is there,
I love
do,
YouTube.
Do you have where you're sitting down on YouTube and like, all right, step one, this is what we're going to do.
Guys like
me,
that's
a thing. I'll get the book and I'll read it, but I can walk around with YouTube in my pocket. And if I have a break for a second, I can pull that thing out and watch somebody teach me something. If I got to turn it off real fast, that kind of thing. It's just very beneficial.
Great question. I also love YouTube. I'm obsessed. Anything I don't know how to do, I go immediately to YouTube.
Right.
This is something that Adam Davis, my editor, and I have talked about as far as YouTube and doing something like that. But we're also going to do an audiobook. So if it's hard to find time to sit down and read, which I totally get that, I fall into that category, I'm going to do an audiobook where people can at least listen if they're short on time and they're on the go.
There should be a section in your book about mathematics. And just start reading that, it'll put you straight to sleep.
Everybody will fall
asleep.
You
know what I mean? Like,
I normally recommend.
What class, right? Put that in there.
Yeah, there should be like a section on, yeah, like FBI policy is normally what I say.
Policies,
and that'll put you right to sleep.
Start reading this, man. Don't worry, you'll go right out.
That's hilarious. Oh my gosh.
But I mean, just, the sleep doctor, YouTube, pull that sucker up right here. Like, man, this is what she says I have, and this is what I need to do. And it's just you telling that.
It's certainly one of the many things that hopefully we branch out into.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm hoping people start to take sleep very seriously once we talk about it more, because it's just something that we don't talk about enough, in my humble opinion.
Well, our generation didn't have time for it. With all the wars and everybody, I mean, here on the homeland, everything that we were dealing with, all of our first responders, all the military, I mean, we gave up sleep. That was just, we gave that up. And then, because when we go off work, then you had to go out. You want to go out with your friends and you wanted to hoot.
Yeah, you want to have fun.
Yeah, have fun. We never got to do that. So when we had chances to do that, we would go do that because you give up sleep. We always thought we could make it up. So everyone who's rotating now, all of us, we always talk about it. It's like, hey, man, you sleeping all right? It's starting to come out in the open.
Especially sleep tied with trauma, because there has been not only veterans and first responders, but there's just been a lot of trauma that's happened.
Oh my gosh, yes.
In the last 20 years.
Our country's been through a lot.
Yeah, so.
For sure.
They can
But you don't get battle weakened, you get battle stronger, you know, battle hardened, man. We'll come out of this all right.
Well, I'm excited to get your book.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks
my pleasure.
On.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It's been so much fun talking to you and getting to know you.
You too. Thank you.